Liebe
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Let me first really accept with a great sense of appreciation the input. We often take input from the Portfolio Committee quite seriously. Even in our planning, we factor it in. And as a preface to what I'm going to say, I should actually indicate to members how personally I feel about this situation and the accountability level that I've asked the council members to take. In our meeting in September, I've asked the council members that if by this time next year we're still in the same situation or worse, I'll write to the minister and ask that we all be dissolved. And I personally will step down. And that's my undertaking. If we're to have the same findings or the same situation this time next year, because professionally we take no pride in being associated with these kinds of things. I've chaired a number of institutions, and it's the first time ever in my life to actually be confronted with this situation. Never before. That's why, as members, I'm explaining and expressing the pain and embarrassment. To me, I really take it personal and sometimes ask, how could such things happen? And how do we account to people who have to sleep on the sidewalks or go to bed without food when public entities are doing what they are doing? So I did actually make that undertaking. It's a record. It's part of the minutes of council. Because I said, council members, this is not a joke. Let's actually make that undertaking that will say we have failed. That's why this intervention, to me, it's not just anything. And I've said to the staff members, how proud all of us will be to say we had a worst performing entity and under our watch it has turned around. I know that nomenclature is no longer as you know, huge as it used to be. So it is my personal commitment. I gain no joy from this kind of association professionally and ethically. Now let me go specifically to the issues that have been raised. The first one, how much money for the turnaround? Sandy Baker will speak to that, but our principle was to say, one, let's use the department as much as possible, and we've approached Easy Go Museums and Artscape to assist us at almost no cost. Where there is absolutely no other skill that we can get, it's only then that we will consider any function that should be outsourced. But the terms of reference and the service level agreement, we want it to be as specific so that the scope is not wide to be taken advantage of. She will speak to the figures because we've said, let's cost everything and let's be clear. But again, honorable members, let's understand this. Some of the programs have been there since the establishment of SARA, and this major intervention, if it is well done, will reverse some of the losses that have been recurring over time. So you'll begin to see the benefit of a well-functioning institution, which may even save monies. Once you have an asset register, you have a proper system functioning and so forth, you no longer go back to do the same thing. So that was the long-term view that we have. And again, the monies that are not accounted for or not properly recorded, that would be the thing of the past if a proper system is in place. that's saving the taxpayers' money. How much money are we paying to get rid of the CEO? I can confirm here now, there's not a cent for settlement or golden handshake that we have actually paid. Because if there is no contract, there is no settlement. And this was the most bizarre situation, which we went to the ministry to report to say, maybe here we're talking just of the 3-year or a 5-year contract that was in dispute. There was never a single contract, even from the beginning, February 2009. So as I sit here, we stumbled into this when we wanted to have a performance agreement, and we asked, can we get just a contract for the period you've been working? None, you'll find. Then I went to the department to say, how is it possible that you would have no contract? As we speak here, the only thing that is there is a letter of offer, and nothing in return to say I've accepted the offer. So it's worse than just 3 year or 5 year. That you then claim there was an oral or verbal promise by the chairperson to extend it to 5 years, is the issue. We said it can't be that Pulse was still trying to grapple with 3 years, which has no contract. As a result, during that 3 year period, there was no performance assessment. But now the lesson we get from that is one thing. For 18 months, SARA operated without a council. So there was no oversight. Everything bounced to the CEO, Alpha and Omega, in a situation. We asked who was approving salary increase. He said the CEO. Who was approving her salary? The CEO. Now that is the situation that we inherited. That's why I'm saying some of these things are so bizarre that trying to explain them becomes so difficult. And we've raised the issue with the department, and the department has taken it seriously to say, never again must we have an employment without the department being given a contract. It's that simple. Now, the issue of the audit plan, I will give that to the chair of the audit committee to speak to, but I'll just run through the other issues. Just like the pending. The pending HR issues are actually at a very advanced stage. They are just trying to get a common date for interviews in the main, or for shortlisting, so we should be well advanced. She'll speak specifically to that. The honorable member said, we talk of managers, where are the doers? As you will see in the vacancies, it's not just the senior managers, it's people who are in the core heritage business. But again, another very unfortunate situation that we only discovered when we started interacting with the staff, you'll find a seasoned expert in the area of archaeology, having been moved to finance, and she says, I have no finance knowledge. I don't know why I was moved to this side, except that I was told I was being grounded. But of course, we've corrected that situation. Now, this is an archaeologist of note, known all over the country, and she's been responsible for creating a group. Just grounded to a finance, and the finance is the area with many audit findings. And you go throw in a person who has no financial background. She may come back with goals, but not the finance. Yes. Now, the link between the provinces and the SARA National, it's stated out in the, Act. And it's very clear. SARA is responsible for the entire heritage management and setting of standards and norms. But in reality, that has not happened, either because of constraints of capacity and so forth. But what happened which now comes to the other point that members were asking for. When we came in, again, I said this last time, let me repeat it. The letter of our appointment would say July 2010. But we were told, don't operate. Wait for the minister to inaugurate you. The dates were being tied, they never worked until somewhere in September. In September, we're told you can't operate until induction. Now you have this period of 4 months or more when you have been appointed, but you can't do anything. And I've never understood the logic of that, because inauguration is just a ceremony where you have a large dinner or something and a few speeches. It has no bearing on the functioning. And during that time, there is no oversight. Again, the DG and the minister have made an undertaking that people will be appointed and they start working. So on paper, it might look like we were there. In reality, we started beginning of 2011. Now, the relationship between the provinces and the PRAS ought to have been so automatic that when there is capacity for the PRAS, they complement what SARA is doing, and those things which are provincial competence would be handled by the PRAS. But the devolution process, which led to retrenchment of 17 sub-members, is the one that was done, though the principle itself may not be a problem, but it was done by the time we came in a manner that was poorly planned and haphazard and led to more tension between the province and SARA, because SARA was saying, I'm pulling out of the provinces, not much consultation, if any. Buildings which are there will be yours. Some people who are in those provinces, either they relocate or they are fired. So we came in when there was that retrenchment program. When we tried to intervene, we were told that this was a ministerial decision and a MINMET decision, and therefore you have no say in it. Then we said, can you give us such proof? There was an impasse because we didn't receive the proof, trying to just correct it. So you enter into a space when relationship between provinces and SARA was at its lowest. And the irony there and the structural problem is that chairs of PRAS sit in SARA council. They come aggrieved by what has happened in their provinces to deal with managers who have just abandoned the provinces. Now the first thing we had to manage that relationship. So there was a structural problem which could have caused tension between SARA, operational managers and the council. Because those people come from the provinces. The act says the chairs or the provincial reps should be in the council. They come with their baggage. But we are in a process right now where prioritize, even in our strategy, the rehabilitation, the rebuilding of relationship and trust with the provinces, so that they do not see us as adversaries. We complement each other. Ms. Anne will speak to the issue of the assessment of PRAS and the criteria used, because there we assess the PRAS and see what capacity they have. Where they have capacity, they are given a permit to do the grading and all the other functions. Where they have no capacity on agency basis, SARA continue to do that work. Now, non-adherence on the financial matters and the performance management and the consequences. The tragic situation here is that the reason we said we're going to have an investigation for misconduct, not once, not twice, more than a dozen times, council was given the wrong information, misleading it. For example, one manager is said to be facing disciplinary action and is going to be fired. And then they say the manager resigned amicably, no cause to come but when we ask. Later on, when the interim CFO comes, the same manager was paid, is it 150 or 250? 250. And somewhere it recorded even to SARS that this was redundant, the position had become redundant. Now we are dealing with an information which says this staff resigned. There was no cause to company. Only to unend, let's say. When the CFO's contract came to an end, we were told it has come to an end, she has been warned on time, and there are no issues. And at that time we said non-variable items should not actually be, no money will be used on them unless council is alerted. But somewhere we discover late that there was a settlement of 150,000. Council never informed. We were told there are no issues. Now the oversight function gets frustrated when you have to deal with the issues. I said in front of the AG, AG, how do we deal with a situation where you were present when we were informed that A, B, C, D, E of the issues raised in the management letter have been dealt with, only to come here and be given a different story in the same meeting that you were present? So that is a situation that has been quite frustrating on our part, that what you are given, and I started saying now, the integrity of the information given, I can no longer trust it. And that in itself is frustrating our oversight function. We then said, in cases where there has been such misconduct, such as the time when people were given allowances, advances for travel, which we reported last year in this forum, we said recover those monies. And indeed, we went ahead and recovered the money from managers. It's now, I think the process has been completed. But in terms of other activities where we said consequences, there must be consequences, when we realized that no actions were being taken, that's when we said misconduct, we sent a letter to the CEO to say we are beginning a process of investigating possible misconduct together with the HR manager. And the HR manager resigned. And the CEO went sick for 2 months now. She's been on sick leave, and the lawyer said she is sick indefinitely, according to doctor. Now the indefinite part makes it very difficult, because what it simply says, the person is incapacitated. 2 months we haven't had a CEO in the office. The doctor has not said, I'm booking her off for 2 weeks or anything. So that's the, you know, situation. The moment we sent that plan to investigate and suspect these possible misconducts, that's the last time we had, and we were just given this lawyer's letter to say the doctor says the person is incapacitated indefinitely. Yes. So on our part, we do not fear taking actions for any staff member, including firing the persons, because this complacency and this impunity is what has actually brought the country to where it is in many instances. So whether it's the chairperson here or a staff member, once monies are used fraudulently, we've put it very plainly that the person should go. If the proof is there, or money should be recovered. With African Heritage Sites, we are in discussions with the Fort Drake Monument, you know, leadership, as well as with General Operman. And we've given them some money to, you know, do research on the graves of the South African War, the concentration camps, and so forth. So we were thinking of having a meeting with them, to identify several places that would be serially declared. So we are at that stage. And we understand very well that culture has an important social cohesion role. And as such, that's why this notion of being inclusive is actually what is informing our multicultural consciousness in the work of SARA. SARA and the NHC. I was part of the NHC when it was being established as its COO and the heritage manager, so these issues, we debated them for quite some time. Indeed, the act itself is broad enough such that there are areas which are overlapping, but there are areas which are distinct. For example, SARA declares a grave site, and National Heritage Council doesn't do that. We also issue permits on the built environment and so forth, on archaeology and all the paleontological artifacts. NHC doesn't do that. They promote, they raise the public awareness, education, they fund some of the heritage projects and so forth. They even do research, but ultimately SARA does the actual grading, the actual declaration of sites. Sometimes, superficially, we would say SARA is responsible for heritage estate or heritage objects, whereas NHC deals much with the intangible heritage. Of course, that distinction is quite superficial. It doesn't take you too far, because even tangible objects have an intangible dimension to it. We then approach the department, and the department will speak to the issue of the legislative review in order to distinguish those roles as what one is doing and what the other one is doing. And then the criteria for selection of the prize and so forth, Dumisani will speak to that. When we say some members of staff were not at work, I think the honorable member said for days, it was some of them 12 months being paid at home. And it was part of that retrenchment process, which was never at
24 months.
So that's the situation we inherited, and we would be told this one is on depression, that one is on depression, that one is being going through counseling, but they are in their homes being paid. Then we ultimately said this process has to come to an end. That's when we ended this payment. We said either people are given work to do, or a relationship is terminated in terms of the law, because it was Section 189 process that was taking forever. Now, the workers' chair that you referred to in Nehao, they said they were writing to us, they were submitting documents and so forth, and we realized that 80% of those documents never made it to council. We only discovered them now. And they will say, we thought you discussed, the feedback was that you were given and so forth. But unfortunately, we didn't. We would have attended to some of the issues. The Treasury approval, the DG will speak to that. I think now we will not again come to this committee to complain about the non-remuneration of council members, because finally that has been approved. The DG was saying they received a letter yesterday. Yes. So that item will tick it off. It was so serious that most of the prior chairpersons who sit in the SARA council get remuneration in their provinces. Then they come to SARA, they are told nothing. But given the culture on the ground, it was not just the remuneration. If you use your car to a meeting in Johannesburg, you park your car, you pay. Very often you wouldn't get reimbursement now for even the cost that you have affected. And what that did, members started withdrawing. Some wrote to the minister to say, if there is not even a token remuneration, remember, when we talk of remuneration here, we're not talking of any serious money. It's simply to say we acknowledge that your time used, we acknowledge that you are present, we acknowledge your commitment. I don't think it's that much if you benchmark it across, because Treasury regulation would say this organization is created at this level, therefore. So that issue, I think, now is history. On the issue of asset register, I think it's very, very important for an entity like SARA, when we talk of asset register and the general register of heritage objects, because SARA ought to be operating at a level where it interfaces with home affairs, with customs, very closely to say this is the full inventory of national heritage resources. When you see this one leaving the country, stop it. When you see this one coming in and so forth. So it goes beyond just even the buildings that Sarah has and the few things he may have. So that how important it is. But again, even as we do that, we are relying very much on our sister institutions like Isiko Museums, where they do a lot of registry of objects to assist us. Even if we go out, we want to be as specific in order to reduce and retain costs, because we don't take kindly to this outsourcing all the time ourselves. We would rather build the internal capacity. The issue of the CEO contract, I think I've spoken to that one, to say one would expect, of course, that CEO maybe would go to some CCMA or labor court, but I'm yet to be convinced, given the overwhelming evidence, that she would succeed in any court. I do not want to take members through the frustrations we got when we were just trying to find a contract. Appeals to the ministry, appeals to everywhere. We were even taken to Tuli Mandofela to say, please stop investigating the presence or absence of the contract. Now, without Tuli Mandofela, we'll be dealing with very serious issues facing the country. Never thought that she could also be used to reconstruct an imaginary contract which was non-existent, because we've been quite patient since October last year. We said, CEO, if you could just help us either with a council decision or with a contract or any valid decision you presented to us, we would never question that we would honor such a contract. Nothing personal, but we risk our own reputation if we continue on an oral undertaking. But during that process, we were sent letters of lawyers to say, don't look into this matter. Appeals to the ministry and Tuli Madonsela, we've written to Tuli Madonsela, and then somewhere staff members are told that she studied with Tuli Madonsela in Swaziland, and therefore all those kinds of things. But this council has been quite resolute in saying there is a law in this country. You either have a contract or no contract. It's as simple as that. If tomorrow anybody were to just help us and say, here is the contract, we would honor that. But now, all things and metrics which have taken place have not replaced the fact that there is no contract. All the people she appealed to, we said, if you can just advise her just to give us documentation that there is a contract, we wouldn't even revisit this matter. As we sit here today, there's no contract. Then the other issue here is the one of forensic investigation. I think we've spoken to that, to say whoever is found, whether council member or any person. Initially, we thought we would approach the department and ask them to help us fund the forensic, but then the legal advisor said, no, Sarah had to do it, because it has a council in place. The only good thing, though, is that during the time of these vacancies, which were not filled for reasons we do not know, at least now the process is moving fast, we saved on the money of those positions. We saved in various areas there, the CFO will speak to that, and we are hoping to use that without actually going beyond our budget. We're quite mindful of that. I've spoken to the retrenchment issues. Is there a will in terms of the turnaround? I do think that engaging the staff members, there is a will. Of course, an institutional culture that has to be tendered around or changed, and the new person, professional, compliant and so forth, has to be, that has to be instilled to many members. The good thing is that a good number of new people are being recruited now. So there'll be a nice mix even when the team building is being made. how was the one person interviewed checked? I think the story of CEO contract doesn't begin with the absence of a contract. It begins with the recruitment in 2008. 9 people applied for that position. Some were already CEOs of heritage entities, some HODs of departments, quite senior in the heritage sector. None of those people were shortlisted. Only one candidate would be shortlisted. And this one candidate, in the report given by the consultants who were asked to assist with the process, the report comes back saying this one candidate, by your own scoring, has come below. I am urging you not to go ahead with appointment. And in the area of finances, the candidate is very weak. Therefore, continue searching. But that advice is defied. Because you were appointed by the council. Not only that advice, that's the 3-year advert, the 3-year appointment would then be extended even verbally against the background of that advice becomes a mystery. I asked some of the council members, how could this, could have this happen? They said the appointment of this one candidate could have been that given the salary, which was not as attractive, this could have been the one person who would be willing to take. Then I went back to those who were candidates. Were you ever informed that you want to take this salary or not? They said, no one ever informed us. Therefore, no one could have said the salary was low for us because no one talked to us. So it's not just the contract, it's the pre-contract evolution of processes that begin to give you a sense that things will not be right in this process. With us, the CEO, how possible is it that for 3 years you would not have signed anything? Anything which says either I accept this or I have this contract. In writing, she says some of the reasons were personal in writing and we've never been taken into confidence as to what on earth could have been a CEO in a law-abiding society would not sign any contract for 3 years. The sadness of that is that when we appeared at CCMA or in one of these, the staff member said, why would you ask for a contract for me when CEO has been having, have been paid without a contract for 3 years? Now that has become a benchmark. That's when then council said, no, this situation cannot go on. We just have to take the right decision. Because when people start saying, I can do, even if there is no contract, as long as I get paid, it was becoming quite a dangerous precedent. So in all this, I think we have been in discussions with the department to say, when people of that level are appointed, it's better to have a contract and give a copy to the department. If the department doesn't find that contract within 2 months of appointment, that should be nullified. And secondly, that councils, when one council ends, there should be the next one ready, so that there's not this period when you have no oversight. Because it has become dangerous to give powers to one individual to do oversight on herself and to generate things, to approve things, and to finalize things. The third one is also an organization that would operate without a performance management system. When we raised this issue and we said we wanted to effect performance management, that's when we learned that there was, in fact, we were not looking for a contract because we assumed it was there. The reason we came into that is because I had asked the HR committee, can you get the contract of the CEO so that we have a proper performance contract with scientific ways of saying this is what we've agreed on, these are the targets and so forth. After 3 months of them not coming back, I asked what exactly was happening. That's when we discovered that they were saying there were problems with the contract. I said, what could be the problems? Contract, you go to HR, they print it, you find it that same day. Now it's 3 months. That's when we learned that there's never been a contract, let alone these 3 months. I mean, this 3 year, 5 year thing, just a contract of employment. And again, the issue of council members. We've been battling to have an ethical code and the council charter, precisely because we realize that as we're dealing with this contract issue, some council members were working with the CEO, were going to the ministry, appealing that this thing should not be investigated any further. We should have some settlement of accepting 5 years. And that in itself became a problem. But I think I'll stop there. Dave will speak to the section, and I really apologize if I took longer. But I thought I should take you into confidence about some of the challenges and the frustrations, because as you sit here, you may say it's just improbable that a council sitting there could not have noticed some of the things. It's just been an uphill battle. Dave?
Good morning, Chair, and honourable members. Firstly, I'd just like to pick up on the question of the composition of the Audit Committee. Our structure is to have a committee of five, that is two members of council and three independent members, and that's how we were constituted in July. Since July, Ms. Laura Robinson, the council member, resigned not only from Audit Committee but from council, and I want to commend the Council of SARA for appointing Dr. Konani Grombi as a member of the Audit Committee. So council has acted and moved to remedy that vacancy. Then we have two vacancies of the independent members of the Audit Committee who resigned at the end of July in the course of August, in a sense the heat of the moment. As we see in the papers, an advertisement was placed to recruit new appointments and candidates for that. That advertisement has drawn 92 responses. There are a lot of chartered accountants, lawyers, corporate governance experts within that number, and we are working through that following due process to make sure we get not only the right candidates, but that we are fair and responsible to all who have applied. It would seem to me, I have produced a short list of some 10 candidates who look strong, exceptionally strong, and there are some with tremendous experience, not only Audit Committee, but of governance and some reputable entities, both public entities and private sector companies. So we'll be looking for that, and it may be, if the budget permits, that we actually go for more than two candidates. That is a matter that Council will deliberate on. So I just wanted to share with you the importance of following due process and the extent of the interest that is out there in this country to support SARA from our customers, our citizens, to get this right, and that is most encouraging. Then on another area, to give some specifics, as far as the forensic investigation and the turnaround, all the beefing up was concerned, firstly, I'm most impressed with the caliber of a young man coming through from DAC, and yes, I think the answer is DAC has now the resources that is able to provide assistance to public entities like SARA. This is a very different position to perhaps where DAC was 5 years ago. And that's hopeful for the future. Secondly, we interacted with the Auditor General as to whether the AG could give support on forensics. That has not been forthcoming. I think they have their work cut out in other respects. Where I do need your assistance, we will be interacting with the AG to ask the AG to expedite the appointment of the external auditor for next year, in other words, for the current financial year 2012-2013. The AG's practice has been to outsource the audit of SARA, and they've used an independent firm. For last year and the year before, it was PKF. That appointment has not been confirmed or extended into the current year because the AG still has to go through his processes. From my part and from SARA's part, that means that we have some hiccups in drawing the inputs from last year's external auditors in order to help us aim forward, and we've got to resolve that and unblock that. What we have done is we've been in touch with the PricewaterhouseCoopers, who were providing internal audit services to SARA in a contract and an arrangement that ended in approximately March 2011. We have received from them internal audit reports from October 2010, December 2010, and March 2011 that had come through, that had been presented to the organisation, and that's where they had actually got lost. I don't know if they were shredded or whatever, but they deal with the key areas that the AG and what we have been discussing in this committee both today and at the last occasion, things like donor funding, subsistence and travel, the heritage properties, financial reconciliations, banking controls, revenue collection controls, the maintenance properties, and frankly, the answers and the manner of the organisation to deal with it was glib rather than picking up the challenge, and that's part of the difficulty that Professor Fakeli has alluded to. Those reports did not get through to the appropriate level of oversight, whether it was DAC, the executive authority, a council. And I think we can take comfort that our laws and processes for corporate governance and oversight, those are well conceived, they work, but there do need to be the structures and committees on the ground that can actually make it happen. We are unpacking those reports, and the issues are not rocket science. The implementation recommendations are there. They actually just need to be acted upon. And for that, we need good people on the ground who can actually draft the necessary operating procedures and ensure that they are implemented. But I'm confident that once there is a will to do that, setting the tone at the top, then movement happens pretty quickly. To turn around, one first has to stop the rot and stop before you actually start moving forward again in a better direction. And it is pleasing to see how that has happened, and that has been Council's focus on containing the budget and seeing what resources have we got in order to expand and resuscitate effective internal audit, good staffing in the appropriate areas. So we're at a good point there. If I look at the actual requirement, we're talking about accountability, holding people to be accountable for what they do, assessing their performance, but when there has been non-performance or unsatisfactory performance, the law must take its course that there's disciplinary action and recovery of monies in the appropriate way. Now for that, we've got to make damn sure that we're following due process, not only with anyone whose services we bring in, but with the way evidence is collected, is compiled, is documented, so that it's a proper job is done, because the real goal is to recover monies that have been unnecessarily consumed or dissipated, because for every rand recovered, that is a rand that is available for expense, for utilization on heritage projects around the country. So it is something that has been taken very seriously, rather than just saying, oh, that's past, we can't deal with it, forget it, let's move on. We want to make sure that we can recover as much as we can and use that going forward, that the message is very, very clear that this kind of laissez-faire attitude is not going to be tolerated in the heritage sector. And there's a degree of being very careful as to how we document, how we prove. And should there be some legal contests ahead, those will have to be dealt with in an appropriate manner. Then the question, is there willingness to achieve? I think the short answer to that is that within the organisation, there are some very, very conscientious and loyal and capable people. We need to have them in the right place, and we need to have them motivated and aligned to be able to achieve what they would dearly love to achieve. And the answer is yes, I think those people are there, and they are being supported by associates being brought in. And I'd like to wish the new interim CEO every success. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll ask the HR.
Thank you, Chair. If I can just explain most of the pending items on this HR issue spreadsheet. The Heritage Officer Burial Grounds and Grave Unit, which is the sixth item. This position was advertised on the 12th of August. It has been vacant for quite some time, and this is the core function of SARA, so we have been battling to fill that. but it is with pleasure that I inform you that an offer was accepted. This spreadsheet was drafted on Monday. The offer was accepted yesterday. So the new incumbent will be starting its term on the 1st of December. And the corporate affairs executive interviews were held last Friday on the 26th of October. And then in line with internal processes and FARO's recruitment policies for positions that are senior managerial, psychometric assessments are required. So now we have sent the two best candidates for psychometric assessments, and once those results come out, we'll be looking at making an offer. The CFO interviews will be held on the 1st of November. IT technician as well on the 2nd of November. As Dave Mitchell had already indicated, the audit committee will receive 92 CVs for that. The HR subcommittee will sit on the week ending the 10th of November, and shortlisting will be done. This also applies to the company's secretary position. And then three more positions were added on the last three, built environment, heritage objects, and the APM. These are new positions to address capacity issues within these respective units. So these positions were not vacant, nobody was in them. They are new positions to address capacity issues within the units at FARO. The address for these went out last Sunday on the 28th of October. Thank you.
You, I think, to someone will speak to the prize and the assessment.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say, amongst these CRAS that have been assessed, we are in a process of reassessing CRAS. The legislation is clear. When SARA was established in 2000, we assessed the CRAS and we found them competent and legitimate. Now we're in a process of reassessing them. Now for us to reassess them, they must apply to SARA. What we've noted is that in some of these provinces, there are no existing CRAS. As a result, there's nothing to assess or reassess. We have a serious problem in Northwest, where there's no PRA, nor a PRA council. In Limpopo, we're told that there is a PRA appointed by the MEC, but at this stage, we do not have the list of names. In Gauteng, we'll be assessing them sometime in January. They were not ready for a reassessment. And KZN has been reassessed, and we're found to be competent. So in the process of waiting for this CRAS to be fully established, and then go to them and assess them. But cannot go and assess something that is not existent. Thank you. That's also to add on, Chair, to say on the backup grades, we are in the process of establishing what you call a serial nomination of all the backup grades, working closely with the MPS Foundation. We have teams when we assess, when we say, we look at the four trigger movement. Therefore, then we grade those that we declare them. We declare them a serial nomination, so that all of them are included and formally protected. Thank you.
And the last one is the CFO on the projected cost of the turnaround, as well as the DG on the issues of safety.
For the cost that we predicted, as Prof. Denny has already said, we reworked our budget for this year ending March 2013. And within that, a lot of the travel workshops were cut. There were also a lot of positions that were not filled, as in one executive position was the COO position, and then the HR executive, as Prof. Denny has said, resigned. So there is budget sitting in that. And at the moment we're looking, we put a projected figure in of 2 million, which is to cover a whole lot of aspects. And if I just run through them, the one would be on the forensic investigation. The other one would be on the entire balance sheet reconstruction, because as you've heard today, you know, leaning from, there's a lot of misrepresentation, there's been a lot of non-disclosure, and the figure in the annual report, as you can see from the report, some of the figures are materially misstated, and the extent of that misstatement at this point is not known. So it's a process of going into the entire balance sheet and reconstructing every single balance sheet item. And if you go back now to new evidence which we've received from PwC, meetings I've had in with Advocate Mitchell from 2010-11, there could be, you know, the extent of misstatement at this point is just not known. So there's a massive process underway to try and reconstruct the entire balance sheet, correct the misstatements, correct the non-disclosures. There's the entire fixed asset reconstruction which needs to happen, which is a massive task in itself. And then it's also going back to, we have an FTA manager in place, and the offended a lady who came from the AG. The expenditure for this year, in terms of fruitless and wasteful, is under control. But historically, going backwards, there's a lot of fruitless and wasteful which now needs to be investigated as to exactly why it's sitting there, what arose, and how, and the consequences thereon, and how to deal with that. And then there's the other aspects, which is just on the other aspects that fall into the turnaround, which I haven't specifically covered, but that is part of the plan that is there, and the audit action plan, the audit outcome from the AG's report, as of the end of March 2012, there's about a 16-page document just on all the action plans moving forward and all the work that needs to be done to fix those, let alone things like I said, the balance sheet reconstruction and the fixed asset reconstruction. So we have put in a figure of $2 million for that, and we're hoping to use as much as many resources internally and perhaps just outsource the last leg of a final decision or a final opinion. We're trying to utilize as much internally as we can. So it's just a projection that we've worked around minimizing other costs to try and come up with that figure. It's not a given figure that we've provided for it.
Thanks, Chair. There are a couple of questions that I think we should respond to. One was, how did the appointment happen for the candidate? Chair, I think we've got a bit of an abnormal situation in the sector. Normally, the appointment of CEOs is done by the board of the entity in consultation with the minister. In this sector, there is no such in the legislation. The board appoints on its own. It does need consultation with the minister. It's one of the things that we're correcting with the cultural laws. Cultural laws amendment bill. We want to correct that because that relationship is important. Having said that, though, Chair, we don't normally see it in the interviews, and the simple reason is this: that if there is any party is unhappy with the decision of the panel, they would appeal to the minister. If the department is part of that decision, then our ability to adjudicate over the appeal becomes compromised. And that's the view that we have taken on that particular matter. However, it does not absolve us from ensuring that due process is properly followed in the appointment of the CEOs. Hence the amendments that we want to introduce. I must say, Professor Figueiredo has covered this. It was an extraordinary situation. I still fail to understand how a decision like that could have been made, but The second issue, Chair, was on the use of consultants for turnaround. We have ensured that we keep this as much as possible as an internal process. I must say, Chair, I also don't like the word turnaround. But I think in this particular situation, we can all agree that it's fully justified. We need a complete turnaround of that institution. Many times people say the turnaround simply because people are not doing what they're employed to do. In those instances, get people to do what they're supposed to do. But in this particular case, I really do think that we need a turnaround from a leadership point of view, from a governance point of view, as well as from a financial management point of view. And that is what we're doing. Come
in.
I'm quite confident, Chair, that we are turning the situation around. Mr. Michel has mentioned that we've got a greater appreciation of the finances of SARA. Chair asked, what is the capacity that we are availing to SARA? We have availed four other senior officials. One is our own finance manager, Mr. Lana, who we were with last time we were here dealing with the audit matters. Mr. Conrad Khriefe is also helping them from the HR perspective. Ms. Maria Bohanet is helping them from legal services. And the young man next to me here, Dr. Diso, is helping them from a governance point of view. So we are trying to keep this as internally as possible rather than to use consultants. Commitment, Chair, Look, our base, our staff, who are already quite stretched, is our commitment. We took a decision that we want to work with SARA to sit tell around. We are not going to stand aside and say, fix this thing. We are going to work with them and fix it. We are jointly accountable to a certain extent for ensuring that that fixing does happen. And I have asked the team, they will be briefing me on an ongoing basis on the things that we have agreed need to be done to ensure that they're being done, they've been done on time, and we are seeing the organization picking up. I must say though, Chair, that one of the things that we do need to balance is that SARA needs to continue working. Despite this, I mean, whatever is happening on a major PR and leadership point of view. I mean, there are developers who are making applications for permits, there are things that need to be declared. And our commitment is that the work of SARA, the product to the community and society of South Africa cannot suffer because we are fixing things. And it's important that we make that balance and we give the commitment publicly that things are going to continue happening. When things need to be made, when decisions need to be made, they will be made and they will be made seriously. That's right.
Thank you, honourable members. Is there any follow-up or any question? Ndapane, I'll start with you. And then honourable Moss. I'm sorry, Professor, to leave at 12:30. I think you've come already. I've got another meeting. Ndapane?
Thank you, honourable. The honourable say it's not a matter of questions, per se. Just to say to the members of the council, that you know our purpose of being here is not to make life difficult for anybody, but to see to it that really interests of the purpose are being met. By saying so, I want to commend the chairperson and the council for the commitment they are showing, and to assure them that they must act on the support of this committee based on our mandate of being here. You know, the question I had, who Dave has answered it. Because I was going to ask, what are you going to do about the man that was paid to these people that are being paid or they're busy doing their own things? And who Dave has answered that? That you are in the process of trying to recover to the last step of the man that was regularly used. That is all I mean in chairperson. Just to comment, the chairperson is coming.
Hey, person, I just want to check on the issue. You know, we have DDGs. And certain of the DDGs are responsible for certain entities. But I want to check, person, on this issue that the DG was raised about the team. The team will maybe have their role to doing overall oversight to assist for the progress. So I want to know, is this DDG part of that team? Because it's very important for the department side that that DDG must be part of this, the team.
Yes, the team will be working with Mr. Dima, and I was not separated at first.
My
something
else?
Chairperson, it's very encouraging to hear that the department is working on the Cultural Laws Amendment Bill, if I got it correctly. I just want to ask Chairperson, would it be possible sometime, because we've talked in the past about this, because there's 15 laws regulating everything in art and culture, maybe the DJ can give you something in writing so that we can see in which direction the department is going. I think this is a very important issue. I wanted to be on board with that think tank and everything. It's, I think it's important. Through you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Shake.
I know. Come on.
Okay, thanks. You know, Chairperson, I always start by saying, you know, when the people who are dealing in whatever aspect
whether it's the government or whatever public institution or whatever, those who are, you know, in that particular situation, they have got the better information regarding whatever we may ask. You know, we ask things just because we don't know. I'm very much interested with this, the statement when it is being made to say they are working very closely with the AG and also the department of, the department also. One is trying to find out when you are working very closely with the AG, it means maybe that the AG they made their findings about your performance in terms of using the funds. They made the recommendation maybe, and also advising you or assisting you to deal with that particular finding. That is how I try to interpret it. So if that is what it means, I also understand that means that to say they also, as AG's office, understood the causes of those that we can call it whatever they found. So also from the department, it means that the DD has just indicated now that in their assistance they offered, you know, personnel in respectively, you know, imported vacancies to assist them. So it means that all what I'm trying to indicate is that what Professor I'm unable to pronounce it. Is indicating that personal commitment that is just that you know made and the undertaking before us maybe probably to be correct, because it's not a good thing in any way all the time when we meet with this public institution. So we ask questions as if people do not know exactly what they are doing and what are they there for. So, but the way you are so open to us today, I think it bears a fruit for us to understand under which conditions and situation they are operating. So what is it that we should do? If ever we do have anything like a support, it means that we'll have to provide as a committee or as representative of the people. Because all what it says, it shows exactly that our participation as a portfolio committee would not be met until such challenges are being, you know, said openly and find ways to rectify so that they can be able to perform their duty, their constitutional mandate duty. So thank you for the chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mofosa. Did you want to respond? So?
Well, I take it as a comment, Chair, rather than something I need to respond to. Well, I think all I can say, we are really encouraged by the commitment to always assist, advise, we'll take those into account, and as such, we even said some of the programs, as the DG was saying, whilst all this is happening, core business is also going on. And we would be inviting members of this portfolio committee to witness some of the work that we're doing on the ground so that they know that the core business hasn't stalled whilst we're trying to deal with the other anomalies. But once the two are working together, both the systems as well as the core business, I think this organization has a great potential to become the strategic asset it should be for the country.
Thank you, Chair. I want to ask a question in a broader sense. It's got nothing to do with the turnaround strategy or a forensic audit or what have you.
I'm going to submit a written parliamentary question on this, but it's nearly the end of the year, so if you could answer me here. I was wondering, sir, what sites are currently being considered for declaration as national heritage sites? And then I'm also interested in what is the criteria for a site being declared as a national heritage site? Thank you.
My apologies. Any other member? Okay, I think those are the last questions. Any comments? Okay. Can you answer that question again?
Yes. I'll give to Ms. Sani to give the specifics, but the criteria itself is contained in the Act, which tend to guide us as to what is of national significance, what is of provincial or local. But to Ms. Sani, who is also part of the actual rating, will also take you through the sites which are in the process of being created.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe if you have an email, I can email you the documents. We have three processes. One process identifying the site, which includes nominating the site. Once you've nominated the site, then you grade the site, whether it's of national, provincial, or local. Having graded the site, then you do the research to establish whether it meets the criteria of order to be national significance. Now, what we have is a list of sites that have been nominated, identified, graded, and some declared. At this stage, because of the capacity, we have limited sites that have been declared. But we have more than 3,000 sites that have been identified, nominated, and graded. We are in a process. Once then we have the capacity in the process, we'll be able then to declare those sites. But I can avail the list of those sites to all committee members. But also just to add as well to say, those people who stay at home, I need to explain this, we're not saying go they want to come to work. When you close offices, particularly Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga, people have nowhere to go, had to stay at home. Because we then said to them, you have to stay at home until then resolve the whole issue. So it's not a question of people having stayed at home. It was not their thinking. They were told that you close the offices, you can stay at home for 2 years. I need to explain that.
But by the time we came in, Chair, these people were already at home for almost a year.
Did you?
And moreover, when the press requested those people to work in their offices, Sarah refused. Twice it was in the Eastern Cape, they needed capacity, Sarah refused. In Mpumalanga, they needed capacity, Sarah refused. So those guys were staying at home.
You are doing the M&E of the department. What would you do? I I think you've got a year now with the department, if I'm not mistaken. You've completed a year, so thank you for your business.
I've never responded in that way to anything positive. That's the opinion. The issue of the past, when the matter was brought to our attention, we raised this thing together with the HODs of the provincial departments to incorporate these people into the past, and with the MECs at MINMEC as well. so that we don't have people who are employed doing nothing. But at the same time, so that you've got the permitting processes in the provinces happening. Some of the provinces are beginning to function right now. In fact, the athletes that we are working on some of them with the parts in the provinces. But I think the critical thing is what my colleague from Sarah was saying. It's the assessment of the capacity of the bus so that they are licensed to give permits in line with the capacity, with what they can. And yeah, that's the critical issue.
Okay. So
you've
answered on behalf of others. So that is, you need to answer.
Will MME or is that? Yes. If one man up here, the car is not paid.
Didn't pay, so sorry. He drove up in the lift. Okay. Are there any comments before we close the members, the last round? I know it's not lunchtime. Okay. Any last comments, Dr. Kim and DJ and whoever wants to say anything? I know you must not close the door that you brought outside. If they've got issues raised as well. Well, in most cases, the staff members, they see the council members and they just arrive.
Actually, we have allowed them to be more open because we had an anomaly. Whenever we came in for council meeting, staff members disappeared from the corridor. You didn't even have a person to greet. And later we were told that this was a company's arrangement, instruction that no one should talk to council members. So it was during that time that we couldn't hear or see even the most obvious. Right now we've encouraged them to be professional but be free to interact. Because I never understood. I mean, as I said, I have chaired so many organizations. When I walk, people are happy to greet, talk to you, and you move on. But in this case, I've never seen anything like I saw people just vanished into their offices if you greeted them. The market manager here, the only time I saw her was when she was bringing the tickets for chess festivals. I have never seen her before or after. Again, she said it was, you mustn't ever talk. So they are free and we've raised them. When I met her, come from a council anyway, we're a democratic society and also we have to be transparent. We can't just suppress people. If the chairperson or any member of council is doing anything wrong, they should report it. And they should actually be subjected to the same. That's why we do not want to mystify our authority. We are only human. We are public servants, we are not perfect servants. All I can say in closing, Chair, is just words are not adequate. I find this session today most productive and the questions, the issues raised, in all humility, I accept those and I've noted virtually all of them. We take them quite seriously. And also make an undertaking that you won't have to commiserate each time we come here. We will be ticking boxes to say, as we said, this way in the danger area. Our risk plan is in place. All the areas which we're talking about are in red, and we want to see them moving away from that space. And our commitment is to move towards an unqualified audit and up to a clean audit. And that is our commitment. And I could never say professionally I would have any pride if we were to meet again and come with complicated explanations as to why the situation is still the same next year. That's why we're bringing in other professionals to come on board, and we're saying all of us would be very proud if we were told that we took a mess and we turned the situation to something solid and better by the time we give it over to others. That is our commitment, and again, I thank you for having been probing. We don't feel bad when raising these issues or even expressing frustration because a country like ours with so much poverty, unemployment and so forth, any sense that is not well accounted for, is an insult to those people who are not having access to these resources. That's all I can say. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. Thanks for the interaction with the committee. Like we said, Chair, we are committed to working with SARA to turn the situation around. Like we work with other institutions, they find themselves in a difficult situation. And we are indeed strengthening our monitoring evaluation so that we pick these things up before they become large problems. In fact, in subsequent even opportunity events itself, we'd like to share with the committee a tool that we've developed of assessing on an ongoing basis our entities, all 28 of them, on an ongoing, on a quarterly basis, so that if there are problems that seem to be coming up, we are able to pick them up through our early warning system and address them. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you to the staff again. Thank you to the department once again for coming. And thank you for action that has been taken since we met. And I know it's not easy big action, especially where the political in a political environment. It's not like the private sector where it's all about delivery and deliverables and meeting the targets. Because here one may say I'm a victim, you know, there's a conspiracy against me and all that can be said. Well, give me time, Dr. Fagan. I don't think we'll call you now. Your round will be next year. And I think from now on, to the best, that's all I can say with the members. Advocate, I know you're not on an easy position, especially when you become the audience, because everybody thinks you are targeting the more you're doing your work. I must commend council members because whatever that we do, even if it's an honorable life, it's not a salary. It's your time, it's your dedication to South Africa. It's patriotic at best. And especially with you, you've been doing it without any remuneration. I mean, we must applaud you as a committee for that. And we give you all the support and encouragement. Don't forget to call us. And if you let Mangau, you can call us. We'll be there. Don't forget to call us. And what I can say, I know that I give orders of Surya, but I still maintain I'm not happy how normal and dim for the children. So Impela, I'm not happy with the way I know you've a lot in effort as a contract. I don't think I'm happy. You see, the issue of Ms. Van Damme it's an obvious issue now. No contract, no work. You know, end of the day, let us not abuse our faith. Let us not abuse our government. And I think what we can also try, try and mend relations also with those staff members at home who were at. I know it won't be easy, but, you know, just bring them back to their senses and review those, or the quality checks, I don't want to call them. Yeah, I know you might be attacked by it. That's what some of the things you just look up to, because end of the day, we don't want the situation where people feel rejected. Because you see, when people, this things happen to them, they don't say it's certain so they say the government. You know, they did the ANC, yes, Moss, you put it correctly. And it's one of those issues. And to the acting CEO, you've got a job to do. I know that the process will come, small letters that I will go and everything will come, so will come and they will eat me and will eat who. And some I expect different positions. We are able to keep you get those letters under you those when you so I'm just saying that even though the principle that must make or if you have the principle you will not have all those problems that we have. And if you're open as well. I always say the best way to make an organization work. I know sometimes it's not into the case of Inyas is always there for the not in my meeting. What you buy them, I'll call you after my meeting. I'm in charge here. What I was saying, is the principle that stands. Because SARA is a very important institution. Many things can be done. We must appreciate the work that has been done, whether before by Ms. Van Damme, she can get that letter, whether whatever the outcomes will be, the outcomes is always welcome. You know, you cannot blame anyone. You are the outcomes, say who you are and what is not done. And I always say in all these situations, please try and relate. Not try, relate with humans. They can bully you if you are not strong, but relate with them, because if the workers are angry, you will never get anything right. You know. And remember now, we just declared as the most important grace and blessings. And people are very interested now in the way in what Sarah is doing. I know that you are a Christian, but welcome to it. That holiness must stay aside, must be fed. You know, I've not just learned it. You will have prayed as our. What I'm saying with the tradition, now I'm a Christian, I will pray and repent afterwards if I've done anything wrong. So I would want an element of firmness. It's not nice, it makes you unpopular, it makes you... I'm one of the persons who are silly, but it's fine. As long as I'm silly doing my work, then it's, I don't have a problem. And as I said, Dr. Skin, I won't call you this until you have time to do all the work. And I will appeal to the fellows, please support the council. Please support, can I talk with you? Mama. Please, you know, I know people will say, where is she from? We've been here, why not us? It you will look at the skill to look at different things. Where you are, do your best, you know. And try not to have animosity in the environment, you know. You know, I've seen so much open help. I've never seen those mafias, and thank God they are coming here still. I wonder what this new what is coming. But I'm just saying that, let's try our best to do our best. You don't do it for yourself, but you do it for the family. I always say, whatever we do it for our nation as well. And one thing I want to raise that I don't like in any institution, especially some of the nations in the Western Cape, there's an element of race classification. You know, we colored, we are more, we whites are more, we blacks are more. And I think it's manipulation at its best, because we are South Africans, we do not see each other alike. Whether who is where and who is when, we will still maintain the other people as well. And we will visit Sarah, I know she wants to come back. You will tell us where we must go, and we will... I just want to thank you again. Have a good Michelle. And members, we've come to the end of the meeting. Next week we're meeting Ben Sarah, so your head must be... fine, hope we've got better news, and a pack of those are the two next week. So we're meeting Tuesday and Wednesday. I know one, I'll ask you why. I want us to finish by the 14th. Okay, Stephen must not record it. By the 14th, I want us to, but on the 15th is my birthday, so I don't want anyone to put on the 15th. So please, when you finish, the quicker the better, that we, last time we finished very late, more than other committees, so I'm doing it now 2 weeks before, so that when we disappear, I'm not in at fault.
See, the committee be aware that both of you, you and me, we are scorpions.
When are you taking this off?
On the 10th.
Oh, so there must be 2 cakes.
And I'm also a scorpion.
When is your birthday?
At 9.
Is it?
I'm so.
Also, that meeting we'll see. I'm going to see the house chair on the study talks. We've made an agreement between me and him. So we were telling us that Poland doesn't have money. So I said, can we go to an African center? So members must just decide. He said we can do two. So I said, Mozambique, we've got something in Mozambique, no? Matulare, and where each other can do. Anyway, we don't need to only this, but I thought of Mozambique and Kenya, Mozambique and Zambia, but I think Mozambique, everybody wants to go to Mozambique. So members can just suggest and to, because I'm going there in the afternoon.
Must go to Kenya.
I think that lady from Kenya. You influenced my members to say Kenya. What is it?
You must go to Kenya and see the Bomas of Kenya and how the Maasai maintain their heritage and all that. They still dress the same way they used to back in the day.
So are you happy to this day? Because of Tanzania also next door. I want to go to Morocco.
Okay, we'll decide between the two. Also, depending on the what quotation, and then all members, thank you so much for asking me this.